The Tigervan Chronicles by Richard Fife. Chapter 13. Picking Up the Pieces. Marcus sifted through the gears, springs, and strange silver fibers that made up his left knee. He had taken both of his legs off, hoping to use the undamaged one as a guide, but he dared not root into either of them too deeply, lest he end up without functioning legs at all. He thought he could see the basics of how the joint worked, but that only accounted for maybe a quarter of the parts, and none of the pieces he could easily identify and perhaps replace had been damaged by the bullet. No, what had taken the brunt of the bullet's force was one of those strange bubbles with odd filaments running through it like a spider web. There were a few other gears and springs that were damaged, but even if he found replacements for them, he doubted it would do much good without a replacement for that bulb. He took the loop he had borrowed from Nicky off, set it down next to the legs, and leaned back, rubbing his face. He had no clue what he was doing. He was a soldier, not a Meister. And back in the war, the few times he'd seen someone damaged this badly, those bonesaw doctors usually just replaced the whole limb instead of trying to repair the damage. Only Quentin had ever taken the time to do repairs. The door creaked, and he opened his eyes to see Vlad slipping in. He had a flask in the crook of one arm and was holding a pair of wooden cups. "You look like you need a drink," he said. "Luckily, I need someone to drink with. Perhaps we can solve each other's problem?"
"Yeah," Marcus said. "A drink sounds good about now." Vlad smiled and sat down across the table. As he poured the clear liquor into the glasses, he glanced up. "Any luck?" Marcus shook his head. "This is so far beyond me, it isn't funny. Maybe a Meister could figure it out, using the one leg as a model, but me?"
"What will you do then?" Vlad handed over one of the cups. "It isn't exactly like we can march up to Tesma's compound and ask them to fix it, eh?"
Marcus took a sip of the liquor and grimaced. It was not his first time tasting vodka, but he still had yet to acquire the taste for it that Gabriel seemed to have. "Maybe I'll have to do exactly that. Either that or be a crippled revenant. Come on, help me get these back on."
Vlad took his drink in a single toss, then stood and helped Marcus pick up the pieces and put them back in. Several minutes later, the legs were warmed up, and Marcus took a deep breath as he slid in the silver pin that would give his right leg feeling. Fortunately, there was no longer the blinding pain, but the knee felt decidedly weak. He stood and tried to put weight on the leg. For a moment, it held, but then he felt something inside grind and strain, and he had to catch himself on the table. He sighed and accepted the crutch Vlad held out, and they both went into the aviary's common room. Brian, Gabriel, and Margot were sitting at a table, picking over their food, and Cook was in the kitchen area, moving about as if she had been cooking in the aviary her entire life, although her scowl was somewhat deeper set than usual. Marcus sat down at the table. "Margot, I hadn't heard you'd shown up." She glanced to him and smiled. "With Kira arrested, someone had to keep a woman's touch in the gang, unless you'd rather I left Cook to do it." Marcus shook his head and glanced over to where Cook was stirring a pot of stew. Fortunately, she either did not hear Margot's jape or just chose to ignore it.
"Kira wasn't arrested," Gabriel said. "Nicky sent one of her people out to check the constable stations, and they don't have her. Then again, I could have told you that. It's the military that took her."
"Then I guess she might as well be a lost cause," Margot said. "If the military got her, they'd probably have her squirreled away somewhere to be used for experiments or something. Maybe Marcus won't be the only revenant in the city soon."
Gabriel's shoulders tensed, but Marcus shook his head before the large man could do anything. "They wouldn't do that. If they were interested in cyborgs, they wouldn't have kicked me out as fast as they did."
"Did they kick you out, Marcus?" Gabriel said.
"For the last time, Gabriel, I'm not involved in what happened last night."
"That wasn't what I asked," Gabriel said. "Perhaps they planned on playing around with you, and you didn't want any part of it. Maybe they want you back, and they kidnapped Kira so they could offer a trade."
Marcus tilted his head to the side.
"Where'd you get a harebrained idea like that?"
Vlad coughed uncomfortably.
"I was only joking about that, Gabriel."
Marcus looked at Vlad. "You?"
"It was a joke," Vlad said. "How was I to know that he'd take it seriously?"
Marcus rubbed his temple.
"Thanks, Vlad."
Vlad gave Marcus a half-hearted smile, then went over to the kitchen and fetched them both a bowl of stew. While he was up, Gavriel gestured to the crutch that was leaning against the table next to Marcus. "Can't fix it?" Marcus shook his head. "No, but I still don't think that it's that bad." He paused and looked to the end of the table. "Brian, who built that cat of yours?" "Brian!" Brian looked up from his soup. "What? Oh, Ada. A fellow named Charles Bagabe made her." "Where is he?" Marcus said. "He might be able to fix up my leg." Brian shook his head. "He's from Gorlito." "Damn." Gorlito was on the far side of Voxfeld. Marcus turned back to Gavriel. "I guess my only choice is for you to take me to see Jason and Torbett." "Meisters?" Gavriel said. "After that shock shield bastard has been hunting you down, you just want to hand yourself over?" "Do you think they would turn me into the guild?" Marcus said. "They already have dealings that would get them in trouble with Tesma, and they might be my only hope of fixing this leg, short of going to Adderven." "They might not," Gavriel said. "Then again, they just might. Jason is a good guy, but he's still a Meister and answers directly to Tesma and Christina." "I don't really have a choice," Marcus said. "I need to at least try." Gavriel looked him over and sighed. "Fine, finish up dinner. No reason to wait on it, then. Vlad, Margot, coming?" "I've walked halfway around the city today," Margot said. "I'll stay right here, thank you." "I'll come," Vlad said. Marcus looked at him. "I thought you hated the guild." Vlad smiled weakly. "I do." Andrew walked into the small observation room and closed the door behind him. Joss was already seated and looking into the interrogation room, and he rubbed his mustache as he watched. Beyond the one-way glass, Winfeld was screaming at Jack Jaraz, demanding to know where Saltine might have run off to. Andrew chewed his lip and sat next to Jason. "How long has he been at it?" Joss did not look away from the window. 2 hours. "Just today?" "Just that I've seen." Andrew shook his head. "This isn't right, Joss. He's ignoring everything else for a band of minor thieves. Revenant or not. And then there was last night's fire. Sunset House just sent a messenger. They want to do a full inquiry into what happened and why we weren't at the factory break-in." "Well, that can't be good." Joss never took his eyes off Winfeld, and his lips were curved into a faint smile. "What do you suppose is going to happen?" "I'll tell you what's going to happen," Andrew said. "You and I are going to be rotting in a jail somewhere."
"Faw," Joss said.
"We didn't do anything but follow orders. How can they blame it on us?" "I had a friend who was in a Garden District constabulary a year ago," Andrew said. "There's a big break-in and a botched investigation, and all he had been doing was following orders. After Sunset House finished the inquiry, they ended up tossing him in the burrows."
"What?"
Joss finally looked at Andrew. "Why'd they do a silly thing like that?"
"Because," Andrew said. "An inquiry is just a bunch of paperwork that the chief has to fill out, and some interviews. He can spin it to be anyone's fault he wants. Sunset House just wants to make the public think they're doing something, not actually find out what happened."
Joss's face had gone pale.
"You can't be serious."
"Winfeld hates us, Joss. Do you think he's going to let his righteous quest for this revenant in like this?" Andrew pulled off his glove, showing the burns he still had from the day at Tider Manor.
"And what about us? We've seen the Revenant and that, whatever it was that had the shock rod. Haven't we done enough? I joined the constables to stay out of harm's way, not be thrown into the middle of a war zone."
Joss and Andrew both looked back to the interrogation room. Winfeld had been beating Jack, and now he was hooking up that horrid machine. Joss shuddered.
"What can we do?"
Andrew pulled out a set of papers from a folio under his arm. "I filled out the inquiry and signed it. You sign it too. Give it more weight than just coming from one junior patrolman." "Yeah, now it'll come from 2 junior patrolmen. Regardless, he took the papers, looked them over, then pulled out a pen. He held it just above the line for his signature and looked up.
"Is this right?"
"It's what is fair," he said. "It's justice." Joss took a deep breath, looked back down at the papers, then signed. Andrew let out a sigh and took them back. "I'll run these to the castle. Make sure he doesn't go wondering where I've gone, right?" Joss nodded.
"Right."
The sun hung low on the horizon, and just down the street,
Marcus could see the heavy, metal-girded doors to the Meister's Guild closed against the coming night. Something seemed wrong, and he realized that, despite the relatively early hour, the streets were strangely empty. "Where is everyone?" he said. Gabriel grunted. "When the guild closes for the day, so do a few blocks in all directions. Nobody likes to be near this place when you can actually tell that it's glowing." "Apparently not even guards," Marcus said. "I haven't seen a single one walking along the wall." "That's because there isn't a walkway," Vlad said. "Tesma guards his walls in other ways." Marcus looked at Vlad in confusion, and the strange man went into obviously fake convulsions. Marcus grimaced. "His lightning?" "Yeah," Gabriel said. "Even the birds don't try to land on his wall anymore. It won't shock you to touch the bottom, but even get near one of those copper spikes up there, and boom, you're crispy as cook's bacon." Marcus sighed. "I guess going over the wall is out of the question, then. So, how do you propose we get in?" "The same way a slum dweller gets in anywhere important in the slums," Gabriel said. "The sewers." "You're telling me that Tesma went to all the effort of ringing his compound with lightning, but he didn't block the sewers off?" "Oh, they tried," Gabriel said. "But this is the slums we were talking about. They built their pretty sewer system and fed it off the river. Sure, they blocked off all the sewers they could find that led back into the city. Yeah, they didn't even come close to blocking all the ways us slum dwellers had to get around." Marcus looked at Gabriel for a long moment. "Really?" "It's true," Vlad said. "It's a shame your nose isn't fake, though." "Why's that?" Marcus said. "Because you're going to wish you could turn it off like your leg." Vlad gave him a smile, then walked back down the alley they were standing in. He pushed aside some crates and revealed a manhole that was half hidden under refuse and grime. Gabriel pulled out a pry bar and lifted the manhole up, then jumped in without a word. Vlad lit a lantern and passed it down into the darkness, then gestured for Marcus to go on down. He slid down into the hole, trying as best he could to land on his good leg, and his feet landed in a small pool of something moist. From the smell, he was glad he could not see all that well, despite the light of the lamp Gabriel held. Marcus moved away from the hole, and Vlad jumped down, although he managed to catch onto the ladder Marcus had not seen, thus missing the puddle of whatever it was. Vlad closed the manhole and jumped off the ladder. He lit another lamp off Gabriel's, and then the two men started down the tunnel. They walked through the dark maze in silence. Before too long, Gabriel brought them to a stop in a dead end. The cut of the stone in front of them was markedly smoother and less lichen-covered than the rest of the walls, and the seam where the walls joined was completely mortar. Gabriel looked the newer wall over for a moment, then he handed Vlad his lamp and worked free a small brick to the one side. He reached into the hole, and a moment later there was a click, and the wall started to slide back and open. Just beyond, another wall was opening inward, and between the two slabs of stone, a series of gears, counterweights, and pulleys ground away. Gabriel looked at the now unblocked tunnel. "Huh, it's still here." "What do you mean by that?" Marcus said. "I haven't had to use this tunnel since I was a boy, and I'm pretty sure a Meister is who must have originally installed it to begin with." Gabriel shrugged. "Guess he must have not been around anymore when Tesma went about sealing off the tunnels. Either that, or he thought it would be good to keep a secret way in and out for himself." Marcus shook his head, and Vlad laughed beside him. "Just now starting to wonder about following Gabriel anywhere?" Gabriel snarled at Vlad, and they continued on, although the larger man did stop to close the secret passage behind them. A few minutes and twists of the tunnels later, they were at a ladder. Gabriel put a foot on the first rung. "If I have my bearings, this will lead up to an alley near Torbit's lab. And if you don't, we will probably end up in Tesma's bedroom," Vlad said. "Why don't you go check, eh?" Gabriel grunted and climbed up the ladder. He slowly lifted the cover up with one hand and peered out, then laughed. "What do you know? I was right." "A blind rat finds cheese once in a while," Vlad said. "Well, go on, get up there so I can hand our invalid up to you." Marcus wondered what he was doing with these people. One unsure of where he was leading them, and the other unable to take the fact that they were in the middle of hostile territory seriously. Once Gabriel was up, Marcus slowly climbed up the ladder. Vlad did not really push him up, but once or twice his hurt knee almost gave out on him and the strange man's hand was there to catch his back. Once he was up high enough, Gabriel reached down and grabbed him by a wrist and pulled him the rest of the way up. While Vlad scampered up, Marcus went to the edge of the alley and looked around. The courtyard was deserted and cast in the long shadow of the central tower. Above them, several windows already showed the steady glow of Tesma's strange light. Hopefully, anyone in those rooms would be too engrossed in whatever experiments they might be conducting to look out the window. They left the manhole cover partially off and darted across the courtyard as quietly as they could. To Marcus, every footfall sounded like a clap of thunder, but no alarm was raised, and no heads poked out of the windows to see what all the noise was about. A scant few moments, and they wore through the small door and down the hallway. They turned into Torbett's lab and found it looking quite a bit different. There was still a general clutter, but the majority of it had changed. The one device in the corner was still there, but everything else was shifted around or else replaced with equally confusing bits and pieces of projects, some mechanical and others that obviously used Tesma's lightning. What the lab was missing, though, was Torbett.
"No one's home," Vlad said. "Are you sure about him always working late? Maybe he went out to get a beer."
"He lives in the complex," Gabriel said. "He wouldn't be outside after the doors were closed for the night. Not unless he planned on staying in an inn for the evening."
"And if he did," Marcus said, "or perhaps decided to stay at a brothel?"
Gavriel laughed. "You met him. Tell me, does Torbett take you as one to go whoring? And I've tried to get him out drinking. No, he's here. Somewhere."
"Perhaps he's with Jason," Marcus said.
"Then it'll be the mill house," Gavriel frowned. "That isn't going to make this any easier."
"What do you mean?" Marcus said.
"This building is right against the mill house. It must be, what, a half-minute walk, if that?"
"If only," Gavriel said. "The mill house is only accessible from the middle of the complex. One way in, one way out. We'll have to come back another day, Marcus. Going there is suicide."
"I can't help Kira until I get this leg fixed, Gavriel," Marcus said. "The longer we put it off, the longer she is wherever it is that she is." Gavriel narrowed his eyes and spat.
"Fine, but stay close and keep your eyes and ears sharp. I don't know exactly where I'm going."
"I hadn't really thought you did anyway," Marcus said.
"Lead on."
"Yes, that would be wise," Jaeger said. "While fortune always favors the bold, it also favors the prepared."
"And it would be best to be both," Micah finished the quote and smiled.
"I have always found that one a bit trite, to be honest."
"And yet it is well used here, don't you think?" Jaeger took a sip of tea and smiled. He had to admit, despite himself, he was coming to enjoy Micah's company. True, he did not trust her a hair's breadth, but it was refreshing to talk familiarly to someone with Voxfeldian training. A light knock came from the door to the hallway, and Jaeger looked over to it.
"Expecting someone?"
"No." She walked over to the door and cracked it open.
"Yes?"
There was a mumble, and she opened the door wider. A guard stood there, his face somewhat flushed. No doubt, he thought he had interrupted the sunset count in the middle of pleasure. He stepped into the room, and a moment later, another man followed him. Winfeld Black.
"Explain yourself," Jaeger said.
Winfeld stammered.
Sir...
"Not you," Jaeger said. "I'll get to you in a moment. You, guardsman, how did you find me?" The guard blushed even more.
"Sir, the Lady Becca said I might find you here. Constable Black said you had sent for him rather urgently."
"I had told him first thing in the morning," Jaeger said, "and if you had the sense to have checked the summons, you would have seen that yourself." The guard clenched his fists, as though bracing for a blow.
"I'm sorry, m'lord."
"What is your name, guardsman?"
"Peter, m'lord. Peter Lassen."
He swallowed hard.
"I'll show the constable out, m'lord."
"No, wait here."
Jaeger turned to Micah.
"This won't take but a moment. If I might make use of your smaller sitting room?"
Micah bowed her head ever so slightly and gestured to a door on the far side of the room.
"But of course, m'lord."
Jaeger scowled at the guard again. With any luck, the guardsman would cement the rumor that Micah and Jaeger were in a dalliance and nothing more. He then gestured sharply to Black and stormed off into the sitting room. That much, at least, he did not have to fake. The constable had him cross enough to chew rivets and spit nails. When Black closed the door behind them, Jaeger wheeled around but kept his voice low.
"Now, quietly, explain yourself, constable."
"I have only been doing what you ordered, m'lord," Winfeld said. I've been hunting the Revenant. A solid block of the slums burned last night, Winfeld. A solid block while you went herring off on a lead after ignoring a direct order to support the investigation at that factory.
You shouldn't believe everything you read in reports, m'lord, Winfeld said. I know those two fools, Snett and Dryden, sent you a horrible lie of an accounting of what happened last night, and...
Not just Snett and Dryden, Winfeld. I also have it from the precinct chiefs, who have gathered the truth of it from their patrolmen that you commandeered for this stunt. Winfeld held out a folio.
Sir, if you will just read my report... Yeager cut him off with a gesture.
I already know what it will say, Black. And I cannot believe you would think me so daft as to let you pin the blame for all of this on those two boys.
M'lord,
be quiet. Yeager took a deep breath and smoothed the front of his coat. Black, I had selected you for this task because you had been among my best. You were thorough and meticulous, and furthermore, you could be discreet. So tell me, how is it that I was so wrong? To his credit, Black did not attempt to say anything in his defense. A city block, up in flames, hundreds dead. I tasked you to protect our city from this threat, not become a worse one yourself. Yeager took another deep breath. Constable Black, you are relieved from duty and stripped of your position. Constable Vigler will take your place in the interim until such time as I can appoint a more fitting chief. Do you have anything to say?
I had found him, m'lord, Winfeld said. Saltine's hole.
Did you capture him? Yeager said. Or any of Saltine's men?
I have one of them in custody, sir, Winfeld said.
I have been interrogating him, trying to find out where they would run to. A man you captured some time ago, Yeager said, and that you have been torturing using unauthorized methods.
What are we, man? Barbarians? No better than those butchers in Adderven? Shall I issue out thumbscrews to all of my constables so they can coerce confessions from even the most innocent?
But... I don't want to hear any more, Black, Yeager said. You shall have your severance, and your record will be sealed. That is the least I can do in respect of your long and otherwise distinguished service. Although, do not expect to be a constable in this city again. I suggest you find some place new to pick up your life. Somewhere far away. Black looked at Yeager, eyes wide and mouth agape.
I understand, m'lord.
And one more thing, Black, Yeager said. Your record will be sealed, but that is not simply for your benefit. I expect you to remain circumspect about your part in this business. That is all. Winfeld bowed slightly and half brought his fist up in salute before he caught himself. He was no longer a constable. He was a normal citizen. Normal citizens did not salute the Sunset Count. He turned on his heel, trying to keep some level of dignity, and let himself out. Yeager followed a moment later. Micah sat in an armchair across the room, and Peter was still standing at near attention by the door. Yeager gave the guard a glance, and Peter ever so slightly shook his head. No, Micah had not tried to eavesdrop. Had Peter not been left there, she likely would have.
See Mr. Black out, Yeager said, all the way to the main gate.
Peter saluted and led Black out. What a mess. And Yeager was still no closer to cornering the Revenant and his mistress with him. Oh well, it would only be a matter of time. He would just have to go about it with a different approach. He gave Micah a warm smile.
Where were we?
Marcus looked around the center of the Meister's Tower in awe. Apparently, only the outer few hallways were stone and mortar. Once they passed that, the entire thing became metal. Grating served as the floor and ceiling, and smooth steel plates made up the walls, with the occasional metal door or stairwell.
It's like Adderven, Marcus said.
What was that?
Gabriel said.
Nothing, Marcus said. I was just thinking this place looks so... so...
hellish, Gabriel said.
Yeah. This must be what the Abyss looks like, mark my words.
I don't think you're far off, Marcus said.
Wait, did you hear something? All three of them froze, tense and listening. A bead of sweat rolled down Marcus's face, and he adjusted his stance to take some of the weight off his bad leg. Something seemed to pull in his knee, and he winced and looked down. Whatever it was, it traveled down his leg, but stopped just near the cuff.
"It's nothing," Gabriel said. "Come on, I think we're almost there."
Marcus nodded and took a step, and then he felt that tingle finish sliding down, and a soft metal clink echoed in the hallway. They all froze again, and Marcus stared down. Another sound of metal hitting metal came from the floor below, and Marcus swore under his breath.
"What was that?" Vlad said.
"A gear from my knee," Marcus said. "It must have worked loose. We have to go get it."
"Can you still walk?" Gabriel said. Marcus looked to the other man.
"What?"
"That gear. Do you need it to keep walking?"
"No," Marcus said.
"If it came loose, it couldn't have actually been driving anything, but I'm sure Torbett and Jason can replace it. We don't have time to go herring off after every little piece you drop."
"It isn't like we've seen anyone," Marcus said.
"Almost like they're all locked up in their rooms and don't dare come out."
"Luck," Gabriel said. "Luck I don't want to push. They do have some sort of security force that does rounds, and I don't like the fact that I have no clue where it is."
"That is rather strange," Vlad said. "Marcus is right. We haven't seen anyone since we've been in here."
"Let's keep it that way," Gabriel said. "Come on."
Marcus moved reluctantly, and for all he could tell, his leg was not any weaker for the missing gear. It surely had been one of the damaged parts. He only hoped that the Meisters would have something that could replace it. They turned down several more hallways, went up a flight of stairs, and backtracked twice before they found the corridor that seemed to go further than the metal interior of the tower would have allowed. Marcus took a moment to remember his bearings, and if he was not completely turned around, the hall led out over the river. Or, more correctly, to the mill house. They walked down the hallway, and soon the regularly spaced doors on the side stopped, and the floor and ceiling became solid metal, although a pattern of ridges covered the floor. Several yards later, the grated walkway resumed, and the walls and ceiling disappeared. To their side, the massive water wheels of the mill house rose up at least 15 feet above them, and Marcus could see the river quite some ways below, through the walkway. His head started to spin, and he pulled his eyes up, focusing on the stationary platforms ahead of them. They walked along the catwalk and came to the first platform. A middle-ranked Meister stood in an instrument panel, where she occasionally jotted numbers down on a notepad held in the crook of her arm. Marcus looked to Gabriel, who shrugged, took a step forward, and cleared his throat. The woman turned around, and then nearly jumped back at the sight of them.
Who are you?"
"Friends of Jason Hare's in Torbett Senate," Gabriel said. "We need to see either of them. Jason, preferably."
"A friend, eh?" She reached behind her. "And tell me, if you're his friend, what is Jason's favorite wine?"
"That he is overworked and underpaid," Vlad said. The woman looked at him, and Gabriel laughed.
"About right. He hates wine, although he can grouse with the best of them, and that is probably the one I've heard the most."
The woman relaxed.
"You do know him?"
"Of course we do," Gabriel said. "Now where is he?"
She frowned, looked at the panel, then turned back to them.
"Follow me."
She led them to the far side of the mill house, where a small building with thankfully enclosed rooms and halls was worked into the wall. They went down a few floors, and she knocked on a door.
"Master Hares, some men here to see you."
"Who is it?" the voice inside said.
"Me, you cantankerous louse," Gabriel said. The door opened, and Jason poked his head out. He looked at the three visitors in shock for a moment, then turned to the woman. "Claire, be a good lass, and forget you saw these gentlemen, at least if Christina or one of her toadies asks."
"All right?"
Claire nodded, but did not move. Jason growled and made a shooing gesture, and although she gave him a worried look, she finally left. Jason watched her go, then waved his guests in.
"Here I was starting to wonder if I'd ever see you again," he said.
"And now, here you are, exactly when I'd least expect it."
"We need some help," Gabriel said.
"Blunt,"
Jason said.
"But I'd expect as much from you."
"It is never just social with you, is it, Thrust?"
"I need help," Marcus said. "Hopefully the discreet kind.
And I can only wonder what kind of help that might be."
Jason closed the door behind them, then walked over to a pot and poured himself some tea.
You know, Christina is interested in you for some reason, Marcus. She grilled poor Torbett for an hour, asking questions about you. Well, you, Gavriel, and Kira, but I'm pretty sure she'd seen the other two before. Speaking of her, where is the pretty lady?
Are you going to help us? Gavriel said. Jason looked up from mixing sugar into his tea.
Depends if I can. What kind of help are we talking about?
A repair, Marcus said, to a very delicate piece of machinery. I'd wager some of the finest you'll ever have had a chance to work on. The catch is, it doesn't leave this room.
Jason stared at Marcus.
Is that a fact?
Listen, Marcus said. If you don't want... You're the revenant everyone is talking about, Jason said. I had a feeling you might be.
Now, I never said anything about those monsters, Marcus said.
Calm down. Jason waved his hand and took a sip of his tea.
Fine. I get to study you, which I'm going to have to anyway if you hope for me to fix whatever is broken. And in return, I'll fix you and keep it to myself. Deal?
Marcus looked to Gavriel and Vlad. The larger man nodded, but the shorter only shrugged. He turned back to Jason.
Deal.
Well then, let me see what's what then.
Marcus took his boot off and folded his pants leg up over his knee. Jason gestured for him to sit up on a nearby workbench, then put on a loop and started looking around inside the knee.
What happened?
I was shot.
Do you have even the beginning of an idea on how to fix it?
Not really.
Jason muttered something else and kept looking around in the knee. He reached in with a pair of tweezers.
Marcus flinched, and Jason pulled back and looked at him.
You felt that?
Yeah, Marcus said.
Jason leaned back and pulled off his loop.
I had heard, but I only thought those were rumors.
Not all revenants can feel all that well, Marcus said. I happen to be a shining specimen, though, although one with a shot-out knee.
Can you fix it?
Jason looked back at the knee for a moment and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
But get Torbin in on this, I assume I can, and have a few weeks of you here? Probably. I can look at the good knee as a reference, at least.
We don't have a few weeks, Gavriel said.
Well, that's what it's going to take, Jason said. I don't know anything about the secret of silver. I barely know anything about the secret of copper, honestly. If I had some notes on the matter, perhaps I could work faster.
And where are we supposed to find notes? Vlad said.
I doubt the library has a volume of the Adervinian Devil's Encyclopedia.
Well, Jason said, as it happens, there is a set of notes in the city.
Where? Marcus said.
Well, they were supposed to be in Tesma's offices right now, Jason smiled and winked.
Except, it seems that someone tipped off the rebels and old Lecter about them, and they went and hired some crack-brained thieving band to blow up half of Docktown just to steal them.
Those were notes on cyborgs? Marcus put his face in his hands.
Just great. How are we supposed to get them from the rebels?
There might be a way, Jason said.
Come on. I have a boat we can take upstream a bit.
I'm sure that'll beat however it was you got in here. I think I have an idea, but we should probably include Brian.
I don't know how much of a help he'll be, Gavriel said.
Yeah, Vlad said. He has not been the same since the attack.
Attack? Jason looked around.
Wait, fill me in on the way. For now, let's get down to the boat and out of here. My luck, if we don't, Christina will decide to come and harass me for no good reason. And I think that is the last thing we want.